Welcome. Today, I thought I would take you back to the origin story of ordinary Zen. Where does it come from? So you hear me talk a lot about all kinds of different things, such as Buddha nature, our original nature, one mind. I think to gain a real perspective of about your life, who you are, where you are, how you got here, is to understand your ancestry, where you came from. So ordinary Zen has ancestry. And if you really want to understand what we're about here, then I think going to what who's called the sixth patriarch, Heining, and reading the sutra of the sixth patriarch, Heining, will give you a good perspective on what the roots of this ordinary Zen practice are. So Heining, interesting story about him. He was a woodcutter. He was illiterate. One day he was out delivering firewood and he heard someone reciting the sutra. And upon hearing the sutra, he woke up to his Buddha nature. So he asked the person, "What is this? Where did this sutra come from? How can I learn more about this?" So this person directed him to the fifth patriarch, to this temple, and suggested he go there and he study. So he did. So the fifth patriarch met him and he said, "Well, you're just a barbarian. What makes you think you can learn about your Buddha nature?" And he said, "You might be the patriarch, I might be a barbarian, but when it comes to our Buddha nature, we are the same. There's no difference." So the fifth patriarch recognized the wisdom that he had, but he also had all these other monks who'd been studying for years and years and reading all these sutras, doing all this work, and they just weren't getting it. They weren't understanding their nature. But this woodcutter comes along, sure enough. So he says, "Well, I'm going to give you a job. You go to the kitchen and you mill flour and you chop wood." So most of the other students didn't know much about him. He was just kind of off doing his job. And they were all, you know, showing up in the Dharma hall and meditating for long hours and doing all these things. And there was once master student that had been there the longest time, and it was everybody assumed that he would be the next in line. He would be the one that would get to become the abbot and become the next patriarch. Well, I won't tell you the whole story, but that's the beginning of Heining becoming the sixth patriarch. So Heining gave these lectures, and they were put together in this sutra. A local magistrate, or I think it's called a precept, asked Heining to do a talk, a Dharma talk, a lecture about the Dharma. This was after he became the sixth patriarch. So there were all these officials there and famous people. There were Taoists and there were, you know, other official people and lay people and monks all came to hear him speak. From my view, what Heining has to say is no different than what comes out of my mouth, unless it's coming from will. You know, I'm not comparing myself with Heining. I'm just talking about the Dharma. The Dharma is beyond will, Heining, and whatever name you want to give yourself or anyone else. The Dharma is the Dharma. It's just this. And whether it was 1,000 years ago or 1,000 years from now, it doesn't change. So I'd like to just allow Heinung to talk to you through a couple of clips, audio clips. Let me see if I can find where I want you to hear what he has to say.
Next day, Prefect Wei asked the patriarch to give another address. Thereupon, having taken his seat and asked the assembly to purify their mind collectively and to recite the Mahapranyaparamita Sutra, he gave the following address. Learned audience, the wisdom of enlightenment is inherent in every one of us. It is because of the delusion under which our mind works that we fail to realize it ourselves, and that we have to seek the advice and the guidance of enlightened ones before we can know our own essence of mind. You should know that so far as Buddha nature is concerned, there is no difference between an enlightened man and an ignorant one. What makes the difference is that one realizes it, while the other is ignorant of it. Now let me talk to you about Mahapranyaparamita, so that each of you can attain wisdom. Learned audience, those who recite the word pranya the whole day long do not seem to know that pranya is inherent in their own nature. But mere talking on food will not appease hunger. And this is exactly the case with these people. We might talk on shunyata, the void, for myriads of kalpas, but talking alone will not enable us to realize the essence of mind, and it serves no purpose in the end. The word Mahapranyaparamita is Sanskrit and means great wisdom to reach the opposite shore of the sea of existence. What we have to do is to put it into practice with our mind. Whether we recite it or not does not matter. Mere reciting it without mental practice may be likened to a phantasm, a magical delusion, a flash of lightning, or a dewdrop. On the other hand, if we do both, then our mind will be in accord with what we repeat orally. Our very nature is Buddha, and apart from this nature, there is no other Buddha. What is Maha? It means great. The capacity of the mind is as great as that of space. It is infinite, neither round nor square, neither great nor small, neither green nor yellow, neither red nor white, neither above nor below, neither long nor short, neither angry nor happy, neither right nor wrong, neither good nor evil, neither first nor last. All Buddha kshetras, lands, are as void as space. Intrinsically, our transcendental nature is void, and not a single dharma can be attained. It is the same with the essence of mind, which is a state of absolute void, the voidness of non-void. Learned audience, when you hear me talk about the void, do not at once fall into the idea of vacuity, because this involves the heresy of the doctrine of annihilation. It is of the utmost importance that we should not fall into this idea, because when a man sits quietly and keeps his mind blank, he will abide in a state of voidness of indifference. Learned audience, the illimitable void of the universe is capable of holding myriads of things of various shape and form, such as the sun, the moon, stars, mountains, rivers, men, dharmas pertaining to goodness or badness, deva planes, hells, great oceans, and all the mountains of the Mahameru. Space takes in all of these, and so does the voidness of our nature. We say that the essence of mind is great because it embraces all things, since all things are within our nature. When we see the goodness or the badness of other people, we are not attracted by it, nor repelled by it, nor attached to it. So that our attitude of mind is as void as space. In this way, we say our mind is great. Therefore, we call it Maha. Learned audience, what the ignorant merely talk about, wise men put into actual practice with their mind. There is also a class of foolish people who sit quietly and try to keep their mind blank. They refrain from thinking of anything and call themselves great. On account of their heretical view, we can hardly talk to them. Learned audience, you should know that the mind is very great in capacity, since it pervades the whole Dharma Dhatu, the sphere of the Dharma, that is, the universe.
See what I mean? Hey, Ning, I will, if you want to get the audio or get the book, I'll give you some resources for that. I guess what I liked about him the most was I felt this kinship immediately. It could be a brother, an uncle, father, a mentor, someone I deeply respected very easily. Yet this was a being I've never met, but I feel him deeply. What is that? I would ask myself that. What is this? Why do I feel this? Deep connection. Because he's talking to me on a different level, you see, that transcends time and space and ideas and concepts of this and that, and touches on the very essence that is in all of our ability to understand ourselves. It's there for all of us. I have no doubt. There's not anyone that cannot achieve Prajna Paramita. Here we are, we're about direct experience. We're not about abiding by an idea and repeating it over and over again, or abiding in void, trying to get some sort of state of mystical voidness. Our mind holds it all. Nothing is missing. Nothing is gained. Nothing is added. It's all there already. We just don't see it. Every once in a while, I just like to bring us back on track. What is this, actually? Be comfortable in the fact that you have this Buddha nature. We all have it. It's what makes it possible for this harmony and balance that is nature to be what it is. The song of the universe, the sound of the universe, the light of the universe, the love of the universe, the compassion of the universe. Maybe when your mind is empty like space and it contains everything, maybe then your understanding will be considered wisdom as opposed to right and wrong, anger and hurt, happy and sad, enthralled. It encompasses all those things. That's why when we sit, we don't try to stop thinking. That's why we talk about our experience, our karma, our experience as being the muck that the lotus flower grows out of. There's no place to go to become better. It's understanding. It's wisdom. understanding where you are. And we don't do this for ourselves. We don't isolate ourselves and say, I'm going to become enlightened. Screw you. You do whatever you want. I'm doing what I want. It's not like that. When you recognize this one mind, we're all in it together. There is no separation. You and I are one. There's something much deeper that goes on there than these two individuals. That's just the way it looks and appears. When you ask the question, how can I help? It's coming from that place of one mind. It's coming from that place of being part of it, not separate from it. And also, this whole experience, it's not negative. You know, early Buddhism would teach that this body is garbage. Our desires, ugly, nasty. Yeah, ugly and nasty exists, for sure, in that realm of opposites. But how you respond to all that and what you do about it, that's the point. Now, remember, Yunong just said, he doesn't deny it, any of it. But he also doesn't get attached to any of it. Doesn't cling to good and bad, right? Doesn't cling to it, you see. It's the clinging part. It's the attachment part that gets you. That's when you feel separate. That's when there's us and them. Recognize that this is all just one life. It's not just my life. And therefore, I can't help but be concerned about everyone else's life too. Selfishness becomes selfless when you're not attached. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be taking care of yourself, of course. But getting back to a talk I gave not too long ago, taking care of yourself, you're taking care of the self that doesn't ultimately exist. But you're not living in a void. This is my body. I'm taking care of it, believe me, best I can. If you want to know a shortcut, it's right here. It's not out there. There's no shortcut out there. It's right here. This is your shortcut to understanding and wisdom. This mind, this heart mind, nowhere else. So one of the things that Heinung said when he first started his lecture was, purify your minds. So when you walk into a Zendo, this is sort of a standard idea of walking into Zendo, is you leave everything outside and you come in with a clear mind or beginner's mind or an empty mind and start there rather than start with knowing something or dealing with life issues that you leave outside when you come in so that you can have this pure, what he calls a purified mind. So yes, so whether you call it relaxing into what is and just being here, doesn't matter how you frame it. It's just, it's what getting into it rather than just talking about it. Yeah. You can't just go around adopting things that other people tell you. I mean, that is just not going to ultimately work for you. So I love this guy. I'm so appreciative for him. And for others like him who have brought the Dharma to us, and it just continues to be in our lives. We're so fortunate to have awoken to the Bodhi, to that this is here for us, that we can become wise beings and understand our Buddha nature. And then the effect we have on the world around us is so different. We're each unique and we have to find our own way. And it's really good to kind of check things out as long as you become sincere about your own practice and you're not just, you know, shopping, expecting something out there to fix it for you. Anything else? Anyone? Well, thanks for coming, everybody. It's nice to see you. Thanks for sitting with me. It's been great.
Thank you for teaching.